Our Conversation from BAE Systems.
Hello and welcome to Our Conversation, the radio show made especially for the community of BAE Systems colleagues across the world. I'm Tim Smith, and this month we'll be visiting San Diego for the opening of a brand new dry dock. We'll have the end of year financial results, and of course, we have your questions. As always, joining me in the studio is BAE Systems CEO Ian King. Ian, hello, welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Tim.
And the announcement of financial results can mean only one thing. Yes, Pete Linus, Group Finance Director, is also with us again. Pete, nice to see you.
Hi, Tim. Yeah, good to be back.
Now, Ian, the purpose of our podcast is, of course, to bring news to all of your colleagues around the world. But after your announcement recently, you are the news. So talk us through your announcement of your imminent retirement.
Yes, at the end of June, I will be leaving after 41 years and 9 years in this role.
No doubt near the time we'll talk more about what your plans might be for the future. But in terms of this decision, has this been something that you've been thinking about for some time?
Yes, no, the chairman and the board and I have been discussing what's the appropriate time for me to retire. And actually, I've stayed on probably about a year longer than the original intention so that we ensure we got the right person to succeed me. And that's Charles. And as you know, he came on board in the 1st of May last year and he's now gone through his induction. And he's in the right place and the right time to succeed me going forward.
And it's a big change in anyone's life, retirement. Have you started making plans or are you still too busy with work at this moment?
Well, the thing that you're told when you retire is make sure that you don't overplan and so that you've got some time for the thing which will come up, which you go, that's what I really want to do. And so I'm learning by that advice from everyone else. But I have a few things that I want to do, a few things that are pretty mature that will keep me busy for at least half a week.
Well, I will ask you more about those in the coming months, and if you choose to tell me about them, that's fine. Tell us very briefly, though, a little bit more about Charles Woodburn, who will be taking over.
So Charles joined us from having a good career and long career, actually, in the oil and gas industry. And we always said that we wanted somebody who had good experience of long-term engineering and capital-intensive programs, and also the right cultural fit and right style to integrate into the company.
And how will you and Charles work together over the coming months and up until June as he prepares to take over?
Well, we've got a plan as to those relationships, if you like, that I have to pass over. And there's a few things and negotiations that we both have to finish and get on with. I can assure you life will sort of zoom past in those 4 months.
I am going to introduce Pete Linus officially in just a moment, but very briefly, a comment from you on Ian's retirement. You're going to miss Ian. You go a long way back, don't you?
Absolutely. I've known Ian for over 30 years. And I think, you know, the last 8 years, he's led the company fantastically. Great vision, man of integrity. Commands huge respect right across the organisation. I'm going to miss him.
Well, we look forward to meeting Charles in the near future, but it's business as usual then for you, Ian. We'll get back to business on the programme now, though. As I say, Pete Linus is with us. You've already heard him. And Pete will talk us through the financial results next.
Our Conversation.
Well, a regular fixture on Our Conversation is a look at the latest financial results. Pete Linus is here, as we've heard. Pete, difficult question, but break it down for us then, if you can, without going on for too long. I guess that is a difficult thing to do, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Really hard to hold me back, Tim.
No, but there's a lot to get through, and to make it clear, I suppose, for everybody, that's not an easy job.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, I'll keep it brief. I mean, it was a good set of results, very pleasing. It's always easy to present good sets of results. Sales were up by about 1.1 billion, just over 19 billion. A lot of that was due to exchange translation. This is where, you know, a lot of our earnings are in US dollars. Weak pound means stronger UK reported earnings. Profit tax was at 1.9 billion. That's 7% up on a constant currency basis. And importantly, our underlying earnings per share, that's our profit after tax divided by the total number of shares we have in issue, was up at 40.3 pence. And again, that's about 7% higher after removing exchange translation. One of the key highlights of the results there was our order backlog. That's the total amount of orders we've received that we've yet to deliver on, and that grew to 42 billion. It's been some time since it's been that high, so, you know, that's a real positive step in terms of longevity of the company. Cash flow was also strong, just over a billion, so our net debt was broadly unchanged year over year. And finally, we increased the dividend to shareholders by 2%, and that's our 13th consecutive year of growing the dividend.
What's been the reaction publicly to these results?
It's been very positive. You know, on the day, all the reaction from the analysts, the banks, and the investors was strong. Reaction in the press was good. It was an easier day. We certainly had harder days.
You must be very pleased also, Ian. I think you personally said that you were seeing encouraging signs of return to growth in budgets. you couldn't ask for more, could you?
No, it was, as Pete says, a very strong set of results. A reflection on the strength of the strategy and the performance of everybody who works in the company.
Okay, Ian, thank you very much. Pete, those are the figures then for 2016. How's it looking going forward into 2017?
I mean, 16 was a good year, attention immediately turns to 2017. And what we said to the markets on the day that in terms of underlying earnings per share, we'd expect to see those grow by around 5 to 10%. And that's a really strong performance.
Okay, Pete, for the moment, thank you. Well, as always on the programme, we like to give you, the listener, the opportunity to pose your questions direct to BAE Systems' senior team. A hot topic since the results, Pete, is the pensions deficit. And as we're about to hear, colleagues are expressing similar concerns.
I'm Nicola Cooper and I work for Naval Ships. I currently pay into a BAE Systems pension and saw in the recent results that there is a $1.6 billion deficit in the pensions. What exactly does this mean, and is it something I should be worried about as a pension holder?
Hi, it's Alex Griffiths, MAI. What's been done to tackle the pensions deficit?
I'm Rob Monfay. I'm a flight test engineer at Wharton. What practical action is the company taking to reduce the deficit in order to ensure the scheme's future viability? And can you give members an assurance that the company is committed to eliminating the deficit?
Nicola Cooper, Alex Griffiths and Rob Monfay there. Clearly, Pete, a subject that's very close to people's hearts.
Yeah, clearly. It's probably just worth explaining a little bit about that. You know, the deficit is calculated by comparing the current value of all the assets we have in the schemes against the liabilities for pensions and other benefits that we're going to have to pay in the future. So first off, in terms of the assets we hold in the schemes, they performed extremely well last year and we delivered a return of 17%. So it was a great result and well ahead of the assumption we'd made. And that performance helps to offset the impact of low discount rates, which are based on bond yields. It's that which increases the reported liabilities. So at the end of last year, across all the pension schemes that we've got, the value of the assets was around $26 billion and the liabilities were around $32 billion, and that's where the deficit comes from. And what's most important to the pension issue is not so much the deficit we report under accounting standards, but the amount of cash that the company contributes to the pension schemes each year. And those contributions are assessed every 3 years, and they use slightly different assumptions to those we use for accounting purposes. Now, last year, we paid around $300 million into our pension schemes across the group, and we're about to commence the next round of triennial valuations in April of this year on all of our UK schemes. And the outcome of the valuations and discussions with pension fund trustees will determine how much cash we'll need to pay in the schemes from 2018 to repay the updated deficits. I think it's important to remember, with an order backlog of $42 billion and many long-running programmes, the group has good forward visibility of its business. The deficit can be dealt with over many years, and it's important to the pension schemes that the company remains strong so that it can meet its funding obligations in the future. The overall value of contributions into the schemes by current employees and by the company and the income from investments continues to exceed the amount of payments that we make to pensioners. And we expect that to be the case for a number of years. So whilst we report an accounting deficit, this doesn't reflect the current cash position of the schemes, which remain well placed to continue to fund our pension obligations.
OK, Pete, thank you for those answers. And Nicola, Alex and Rob, thank you for those questions. If you'd like to get in touch, we'll tell you how to do that at the end of the programme. And we have more questions also later in the show. But next, we're off to San Diego.
Our conversation.
Now, in the US, BAE Systems Inc. recently opened a brand new dry dock, the Pride of California, at its San Diego shipyard. It's part of a $100 million investment to support the US Navy as it rebalances its fleet into the Asia-Pacific region. The new facility is big, really big, roughly the length of three football fields and capable of lifting a 55,000-ton ship. We drafted in Sarah Chadwick from Platforms and Services to be our roving reporter for the grand opening.
With me here is Erwin Bieber, the president of Platforms and Services. We just finished the landmark ceremony here for the employees at San Diego. Erwin, tell me a little bit about why it's so important to recognize employees.
Sarah, I'll tell you, it's just a very proud day for the team. The way they all came together over the last 2 months since the dock arrived here and to main schedule in light of the fact that we have a ship coming into the dock in just a couple weeks was nothing short of amazing. It shows it takes an incredible team effort, and that's exactly what the team did here.
I'm joined by Kara Bandera, our environmental manager. So, Kara, talk to me a little bit about some of the environmentally friendly features of the dry dock.
Yes, when we decided to build this dry dock, we wanted to make sure that we had one of the greenest dry docks. We wanted to ensure that the dry dock was built with things that made it environmentally friendly. So the dry dock collects all of the stormwater, so there's no stormwater discharges from it. The It's all air cool, so there's no cooling water discharges or fire main discharges. And the paint that was used on the hull of the dry dock was not antifoulant coating to reduce any type of pollutants that might enter San Diego Bay.
Brian Fantel, and I've been here almost 10 years. I'm the facility manager.
What is your favorite feature about this dry dock?
The fact that its overall size, its capability will allow us to do any ships that come under the Coronado Bridge and really set us up for the future for whatever the Navy can throw at us.
Sarah Chadwick from Platforms and Services, our roving reporter for the day there. I'm a bit worried about my job, Ian. Sounds fantastic. Sounds massive. I know you've not seen it in person yet, but why is that investment so important?
Because as the US Navy pivots from the East Coast, where we had facilities, to the West Coast, where we had existing facilities, we need to increase the capacity to take these large vessels. And that's what the team have done. We have our first vessel in there, so we immediately hit the ground running, and it's going to be a great asset for the future.
Ian, thank you very much for that. Sit tight. We have questions from your colleagues coming next.
Our conversation from BAE Systems.
Right, this is Our Conversation. I'm Tim Smith. So we've had a question for Pete. Here's one for you now, Ian.
Hi, Ian. My name is Michael Ratcliffe, an engineer now with Naval Ships in Scotstoun, Glasgow. Having run our large company for several years, it's clearly impossible to keep tabs on everything that's happening. So how do you delegate as a chief executive what key criteria you look for in people and who you're going to entrust responsibility to?
Now, before you say it, Ian, I'm going to say it. That is a great question. Delegating responsibilities.
Well, it is a great question. I mean, at the end of the day, management is not a science. It's a bit of an art, and you have to put faith in those people who are running the company. But the first thing you must do is to make sure you have clear lines of responsibility, and so people know what they're going to do. And then when you determine what the strategy is and what you're asking them to do, you determine the characteristics of the people to do the role. On that basis, you build up the trust in the organization. We have clear reporting lines. We then have clear ways that we review the business, and you make sure that you have the transparency going from anybody who's doing anything right to the top of the shop, and that's the way you keep tabs on what's going on and support them to drive the business forward.
And just coming back to the second part of Michael Ratcliffe's question, what key criteria do you look for then in people?
Trust and integrity is what you look for in everybody that works for the company.
Okay, Ian, thank you for that answer. We're going to get our money's worth out of you for this month, Pete. Here's a question from Douglas Johnson.
From my perspective, one of our main barriers to becoming more efficient is intercompany rules, which make it difficult to share resources between businesses. Is this something the Executive Committee recognises? And if so, are there plans in place to improve this, particularly in the UK?
Yeah, Douglas, it's Pete. I mean, this is an issue that has come up before. Clearly, one of the things we have to do when we're looking at resources is looking at maximising the position for the company first and foremost. I'm aware on this one in particular that where there is surplus labour, we need to be in a position where businesses offer that labour up without sort of adding profit, second-tier overhead recoveries. And I've already taken a bit of an action by picking up with the UK FDs on this point, that where we do have sort of situations of surplus, that we shouldn't be charging profit. And hopefully that'll be fed back to you on a one-to-one fairly soon.
Ian, anything you'd like to add to that?
No, look, this is an issue that arises occasionally. It's not all the time, and we just have to make sure that the person who's responsible for the business flags it up to the other person that they're trying to get the resource from and come to a sensible conclusion. We do have good accountability in the organisation. It's one of the strengths that people have both responsibility and authority for what they're doing. And we just need to make sure we don't cut across that, by having a free-for-all of resources. But equally, you need to do the sensible thing, and we often do.
Okay, guys, for the moment, thank you. If you'd like to put a question to Ian, Pete, or indeed any of BAE Systems' senior leaders, just drop an email to ourconversation@baesystems.com. That's ourconversation@baesystems.com. Now, quite often, we like to end the show with a look at Ian's diary, but this month, we're more interested in your diary, Pete. I'm thinking there might be an important date coming up for you in April. Lots to sort out, lots to plan, I believe.
Oh, wow. Yeah, caught me with that one, Tim. Yeah, I'm getting married on the 22nd of April. So I have several dates looming, including a couple of stag do's, the wedding itself, honeymoon, and then coming back to reality with the annual general meeting.
Pete, congratulations. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on this edition of the programme. Before we go, Ian, talk us through what's happening in your diary over the next few weeks, please.
Well, the next 2 weeks, in fact, we're partway through going through the shareholder meetings. These are the one-on-ones that we do with our shareholders, both in the UK and in the US. And then we'll be doing the meetings for the first quarter. And then at the end of April, I've got to prepare myself for Peter's wedding, when I've got to be on my best behaviour all day.
Have you bought the present yet?
Bought the present? He never told me that was a prerequisite of coming to his wedding.
Surely there's a wedding list, Pete.
He wanted a Portsmouth scarf, he said.
Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed to the two of you. That's it for this edition of the programme. When we come back next month, we'll have a report from the Chairman's Gold Awards in the US, more news and features from the BAE Systems community, and of course your questions. Plus, we'll also have another special competition for you, so tune in for your chance to win another superb prize. For now, though, from me, Tim Smith, from Pete Lynas, and from Ian King, it's goodbye.
Our conversation, back next month.